Hello and welcome to the Bingeables podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chin Lin
and Cammy.
Welcome back, Cammy, to the Bingeables podcast. We are going to dive right into talking about Shadow and Bone, the fantasy drama series that is now streaming on Netflix. So, but before we do that really quick, the show is based on the young adult fantasy novels, Shadow and Bone Trilogy, and the Six of Crows Duology. I can never say that. Why?
It's a weird word.
I think duology. It's duology. Ah, fuck.
There's two books in that series.
There's two books in the sequel series by Lee Bardugo. Lee Bardugo is also a consulting producer on the show.
Just a quick warning, this is our episode with spoilers of the show. We will be talking about major events in the show and possibly how it ended.
Oh, we're definitely going to talk about how it ended.
So if you haven't watched it yet and don't want it to be ruined for you, maybe take a minute to pause this episode and go and watch Shadow and Bone before listening again.
Thank you so much for the spoiler warning. This is your one and only chance, guys. One and only chance. Okay. So what I'm going to start by kind of just talking about things that I liked and I didn't like. And I think as we discuss more, because there's so many aspects of this show to talk about, mm-hmm. I know we can't cover everything in like an hour, hour and a half, but we'll just try to do our best. So things I liked. I loved the Crow Gang. They were my favorite. And I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it because, you know, honesty is the best policy. Yeah. Alina's storyline was interesting, but not as appealing to me than the Crow storyline. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, the Crows, your Kaz, Inej, Jesper, their adventure is... You know, like they're on a mission to capture someone, and they go through these adventures and heists, and they have to disguise themselves. There's just more going on with the Crow Gang.
Yeah,
you felt the same?
I felt about the same. Jasper especially was my favorite. He was just so like bubbly and funny, and. He was so confident and had some like great one-liners or like quips.
And the actor who plays Jesper, Kit Young. That's yeah. Right. Kit Young has the perfect facial nuances.
He does.
Yesterday, I was rewatching the parts of the Crow Gang. So I rewatched like episode 1, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah.
And I was like trying to remember, like, you know, what was their backstories again? I need a refresher.
Yeah.
And Kit Young had the funniest facial expressions in like the scenes where he's not saying anything, but he's just like making a face.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved the Crow Gang. I have very few complaints about them and their story. And you know, Milo the Goat.
Yep. I liked Milo the Goat. I liked even more that once they had to get rid of Milo the Goat, Jasper just kept bringing it up. Kind of like pouting like, Milo the Goat's not here.
I miss Milo.
Yeah, like...
And I love how he gave him the bullet necklace. It's like, here, something to remember me by. I'm gonna Google and see if you can get Milo... If there are Milo the Goat plushies...
They had them on the, like...
The after party.
After party had them, yeah, as, like, a reward.
For the trivia. Yeah, I was like, damn, I'm jealous. Right? I really want one now. And, like, even if there aren't any, you can probably just get, like, a regular goat plushie.
And just put the bullet necklace on it.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't get an actual bullet, but, yeah, but something that kind of looks like a bullet.
I'm sure there's someone on Etsy who's made, like, a resin cast of the bullet necklace or something.
Yeah. Man, people on Etsy are so creative. But
right?
We digress. Yeah. So, the Crow Gang was my favorite. I definitely enjoyed their storylines a little bit more. And I don't know, I feel bad saying this. I just was not compelled by Alina.
Yeah, she didn't have, I don't want to say she was like a flat character, but she didn't seem to have as much
personality.
Yeah.
Like you know, you know she's loyal to Mal. She's always been loyal to Mal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just felt like she didn't have a lot of striking personality traits. Yeah. She was kind of just going with the flow, going with whatever was thrown at her. And she started to have her own voice after she got her powers.
Yeah, it took her a while to, like, know where she personally stood, it seemed like.
Yes.
And it just, like you said, she went with the flow with a lot of stuff, even if it seemed like it would have been detrimental to her. She was just like,
but
I guess this is happening.
Everything was new to her, so she just trusted that whatever was happening was supposed to happen.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. But we'll get more into her and
her story arc.
Kerrigan. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. The other thing I liked was Ben Barnes is really good at playing bad guys.
Yeah, he's so good at being like that smarmy sort of like conniving
son of a bitch.
Yeah. That works.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. You can curse.
Noted.
Okay. I mean, I think I only had one guest who didn't really curse, but, like, you're totally welcome to curse.
Okay, cool.
But I love Ben Barnes's performance as the bad guy, because Dorian, when he was Dorian Gray in the movie Picture of Dorian Gray, like, Dorian Gray was very, like, complex and not, like, outright evil, but sort of definitely darker.
More like anti-hero, not quite the villain.
Yeah. Okay. And here, we find out in the second half of this season that he's obviously the villain. He's just been very manipulative. Yeah. And I'll go into a little bit more later, but I think he did a great job playing the bad guy.
He did. It was definitely different from what I've seen him in before.
Yeah.
Which was nice to see.
Mm-hmm. He's got one of those faces that makes him look like he could be a douche.
Yeah.
He could be a douche. To put it in simpler terms.
Yeah.
The third thing I really liked was, I'm, like, a huge nerd when it comes to, like, appreciating and lots of forms of art, whether it's, like, painting, sculptures, compositions of music. Like, obviously, I'm a huge fan of the Game of Thrones music by composer Ramin Djawadi. You know what? I can never say his name. I fuck it up all the time. But in this show, I was a huge fan of the sets.
Yeah, they did a really good job of set design and, like, the world-building aspects that go with that.
The ship was good. I liked the ship was very simple. They didn't overcomplicate things.
Mm-hmm.
Little Palace was beautiful.
It was.
Like, why is it called Little Palace?
I don't know.
I forgot, but it didn't seem little by any means.
It didn't.
And it was just a beautiful Russian-style palace.
It was.
Yeah. The palace was beautiful. Oh, the crow club looked good.
It did.
Especially Kaz's room, because I mentioned how I rewatched the first episode, the crow scenes. He loves art.
He does.
Like, that just makes me like him even more. He has an eye for these things.
Yeah.
And he's just going to go steal it.
Yep.
Because he knows he can do it. He's got the gang for it. And, you know, money, money, monies.
Yep.
And then the fourth thing I liked, and this is kind of going to lean into things that I didn't like. And I know our conversation is free-flowing. But so I like that Alina is biracial. Her character is, well, first of all, Jessie Mae Lee, she is, part Asian, and the character Alina Starkov is, part Asian in the show, in the Grisha universe. So, in the show, there's a, and you see a map of the universe, you see the map of their country in throughout the season. So, like, Ravka is north of this territory called Shuhan. And obviously, Ravka in this case is like Russia, the equivalent of Russia. Yeah. And Shuhan in this case is the equivalent of China. Like, that part is obvious.
Yeah.
Now, what I like that they chose a biracial actress to lead the show. What I did not like is the presentation of these racial issues, because they felt too real to me. The racism is too real. And I guess the way it just came up a lot in the show, like they were hitting it home. Yeah, this girl's half shoe. Yeah, she's half shoe. Yeah, she's half shoe. It's like, oh, you're half shoe? Get to the back of the line. You know, like when she wanted food at the army.
Yeah.
It's just, it's terrible. Like, I kind of understand how they want to go for realism, because at the end of the day, the bare bones of Ravka politics, Shu politics, all of this racial tensions, it represents real life. I get that, but I think they just hit it home too much.
Yeah, like they touched on it. I get what you're saying, I think.
Yeah. Like, I like that there's representation, because we do need more of that.
Yeah.
We need more Asian characters as leads. We need more Black characters as leads, Hispanic characters, so on and so forth. But I did not like how they presented this.
Like, there were too many moments.
And it
where they brought it up where it maybe wasn't necessarily necessary.
Exactly.
To the story.
I remember in the pilot episode, when you're in that first army area, there's a poster of a Shuhan emperor or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's clearly Chinese. And, like, it's obvious that the first army, the Rafkin people, don't like the Shuhan people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, like... I don't know. And the other thing, the other controversy, and this is, I'm obviously leaning more towards the thing that I don't like, but the other controversy is that I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that Alina Starkov in the book is not part Asian. Like, they chose to make the character in the show part Asian to kind of portray the racial tensions. Yeah.
So, like, in the books, she's not, like, part Shuhan or whatever? Like, they didn't touch on that? Or
I'm gonna pull up the Slate article.
Like,
I think in the books she wasn't Shu.
Okay. That's kind of odd. Yeah, that's...
Oh, here it is. According to Slate.com, this was written back in April when the show released, in Leigh Bardugo's Grisha Verse books, Alina is white, but the Netflix series changed Alina's race to reflect the actress Jessie Mae Lee's half-Chinese heritage. And as a half-Chinese person myself, this is the writer of the article, I know all too well that What Are You? Is the world's worst and yet most popular guessing game for mixed race people. And so, like, I've heard that too. What are you? Like, where are you from? No, really, where are you from? Like, you're getting instances of this in the show with Alina, and it's just unnecessary.
That's really weird then. Like, if they changed it in the show to make her part Shu Han and then made it that so they had it reoccurring that much in the show when it was something they added. Yeah, that makes me uncomfy.
Yeah, like, yeah. And, like, I wonder how Jesse feels.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know the details of her being casted, like, if she read the books before or after she got casted.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I wonder how she really feels about this.
Like,
obviously, she's glad to be a lead. She's getting paid more because she's a lead character, but
yeah, but how much input did she have, or did she have the ability to comment, like, hey, that's not great?
Yeah, yeah. So that was another thing I didn't like. But hey, this is a good segue. I'm gonna start talking about other things I didn't like, guys. I do want to say the fact that I did rewatch parts of this show prior to recording kind of lends itself to the fact that it is a bingeable show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
How long did it take for you to finish?
Maybe a week. But I watched, like, the first four episodes in one sitting.
Oh, yeah.
And then a couple days later, I watched another episode. And then I watched another episode. And then, like, 2 days later, I watched the last two.
Okay.
So, like, I watched it in clumps, not so much, like, all in one go, but
but you binged the first half.
Yeah.
So, I think for me, it took 2 or 3 days. Yeah. But I think it was the same. I binged, like, the first 3 or 4, and then for the second day and the third day, I purposefully spaced it out because I knew there was only 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I knew it was ending, and I didn't want to finish it too quickly because it's going to be at least a year and a half for the second season.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know the details of when they shot, but they probably shot pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Definitely pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. So, other things I did not like, and these are a lot of these are going to be nitpicky. So, I guess, yeah, and I'll just start. Alina narrates the first episode, and I think there's other parts where she narrates in the season, but
I know she narrates at the end as well, at least for a little bit.
Okay.
But
I did not care for her narration. I feel like it was kind of a shortcut. Like, when I go into a show like this, I'm kind of expecting, like, an omniscient narrator, someone who's not in the action telling me some background information. So, like, when I first watched the pilot, I was like, oh, the main character's narrating. Oh, okay. I don't know. It's a nitpicky thing.
It's storytelling-wise, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Because she doesn't know everything.
Yeah, like, the way they film the show in comparison to that narration, it should have been done if they wanted her to narrate. We should have figured out things as she figured them out, and not, like, more omnipotently, like you said, like we actually do.
Am
I making sense?
It doesn't line up, because having her narrate versus having an omniscient narrator, like, she's learning new things. But I don't know. I feel like I hit it home. I think you said it. I think you said it well. But
yeah,
I would have preferred either no narration or an omniscient narrator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what else? I thought her falling for Kerrigan was such a cliche.
Yeah, it...
But you kind of expect it, because when you first meet Kurrigan, like, he's got that sexy charisma.
Yeah, he...
Like, he's very alluring. His presence must be acknowledged.
Yeah.
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 So, I think she kind of fell for him because he is, like, kind of a mentor and also, like, this authority figure.
Yeah, it,
I don't know. What do you think?
It made some sense to me, I feel like, but you were right. It's definitely a cliche, and it's very much a, like, especially because she's the sun summoner and he's a shadow summoner, there's, like, the light versus dark going on, which is interesting until you realize, oh, he's definitely the villain, and...
I'll get more into the villain stuff later, because I think by the end of this show, I definitely hate him.
Yeah, I think a large part of the reason she inevitably does fall for him is because he is, we figure out he's like hundreds, if not thousands of years old.
And he's really good at manipulating.
Yeah, he has experience manipulating people to do what he wants them to.
Yeah. But we'll definitely circle back to that, because I have, like, this Kurrigan analysis all figured out, and I like this analysis, and it's very rare for me to feel this confident about a character analysis. So, third thing I did not like. So, there's a C plot. Nina, the Heartrender, and the Fjordan witch hunter guy.
I want to say his name is Matthias.
Matthias?
Matthias. It's like a weird...
It's like a version of Matthew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like an old version of Matthew.
Yeah, Matthias. Yeah, yeah. It's got to be Matthias. Let's check IMDb really... Yeah, yeah. Matthias. I guess the H is silent.
Yeah. At least that's how they seem to pronounce it in the show.
Okay. So, Nina is a heart render. Oh, fuck. We gotta talk about this real quick. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
Okay, okay. This show is so dense in its terminology, the vernacular. Like, if you don't understand what a heart render is, what a squalor is, it's going to take, if you don't understand it off the bat when you hear it, it's going to take you maybe a few episodes to realize what exactly it is. But it's just like different classifications of Grisha.
Yeah.
So a squalor is someone who can like manipulate wind.
Mm-hmm.
Inferni, that's obvious. Someone who can control fire.
Mm-hmm.
Heart render, like, it's hard for me to explain heart render, but...
They're simultaneously, like, a healer, but they can also use that to injure people as well. Like, they have complete control over people's bodies. Like, hearts and minds and, like, their ability to breathe.
Yeah, yeah. A heart render could be good or bad. They can heal you, be on your side and heal you, or they could stop your heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So heart renders are really cool, and I guess rare in this case, because
I believe so.
In the pilot, Kaz and gang had to find a heart render to get the job to go across the fold.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nina's storyline, the plot C, she's a heart render that was, I think, working for Kurrigan, but she got captured.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So heart renderers are really cool. But yeah, that was something I didn't like. If you weren't familiar with the books, if you hadn't read the books, obviously you won't know what these terms mean. So I don't think the show did a well enough job explaining those terms to us.
Yeah. Yeah. I made note of it too. I felt like with how dense the terminology was, like the way you described it, is there should have been a bit more of exposition. There should have been a bit more exposition to explain everything with how much you need to know in order to completely understand what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. But sorry, back to Nina.
Yeah.
Back to Nina. So here's another cliche. This is the third cliche that I did not like. Nina and the witch hunter, Mateus, they start falling for each other. And I'm just like, no, this can't be happening. This is 2021. Why are we seeing stories like this? Still.
Yeah.
Where someone falls for their captor.
Oh, it was...
What's that called? Stockholm Syndrome?
Yeah, I believe it's called Stockholm Syndrome.
There's so many memes of Belle falling for the Beast because of Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah,
It's kind of like that.
It's kind of like that, but...
They're also going through a lot of stuff because they're traveling to... They get to Ketterdam?
I believe they get to Ketterdam.
Yeah, yeah. But they were in that cold, icy area. What was that called?
The Fjord?
Fjorda? I don't know.
Fjorda? Yeah. It was like a play on the fjord.
Yeah. There was a part where they're in very cold, icy, snowy weather, and they take refuge in a cave, and they're wet, and they have to take their clothes off, and they have to warm each other, obviously, science. However, this is way, way too reminiscent of Jon Snow and Ygritte in Game of Thrones, and I'm just like, y'all two, I mean, the characters, not the characters, the writers are forcing it, and I'm just like, stop it. I know what you're trying to do. It's not working.
It's the share a bed trope. which is like very reoccurring in fan fiction. They've got to stay together, but there was only one bed. But
it's cold and they got wet, so they have to derobe.
Yeah, it's just...
Unrobe, not derobe. What am I saying?
I don't know if I want to call it Stockholm Syndrome or if it's like a trauma bond of them having to go through the frozen wasteland for that long together in order to stay alive. But it seemed unnecessary. A big like dislike of mine too was this C plot just in general because it felt like it made no sense to the storyline.
Okay, can you elaborate some more?
Because like... I know Nina links to Kerrigan in that she was working for him, and I know the crows were looking to hire Nina to get across the fold for their job.
Oh, no, they found someone else to be the heart.
Oh, they found someone else? Okay.
Yeah, but at the end, they needed a heart render.
They needed a heart render. Yeah. But she, like, linked to both in the beginning and towards the end, but actually, like... What they were doing, like her and Mateus, didn't seem to impact the story at all otherwise. Like, and in the beginning it was interesting, like watching her interact and seeing that other aspect of the world. But later on, like, it'd cut to her and Mateus, and I'd be like, all right, this is great. But I'm more interested in what's going on with Alina and the crows and all of them right now, and not this C plot that seems to have no impact on what they're doing.
Although I do want to give a shout out to the actors, because they did a great job.
I really liked the actors, and they did a good job. It's just the actual writing of that
arc. Their plot was, eh. But Nina was, played by Danielle Galligan, and Mateus was played by Callahan Skogman. But yeah, they did really good. I liked Mateus's accent.
Yeah.
Like, if he wasn't a witch hunter, I'd say he was hot. Very good looking man.
Yeah. Like you said, his acting was really good. Like, I really believed that character and his hatred, but like... It was hatred out of what he was taught, not
out of
experience with those people.
He grew up in a very traditional culture that's anti-witch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess also very, very old school in that he wants his women to be housemakers, housewives.
Homemakers. Yeah, that's true. Like, he has a big aversion to Nina because Nina's very, like, upfront about
she's very blunt. Her
sexual desires and needs, and that, like, I'm a woman, but I'm also a sexual being, but I'm still a person, and I'm not going to hide that from you.
Yeah, and to him, she's the opposite of what he would like in a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So their dynamic was a bit interesting in that sense, because it's kind of like opposites attracting, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, like, I think you're right in that the third plot was, wasn't really connecting to the first two plots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you liked or didn't like?
Like I said earlier, I liked the crow's friendship. I especially liked the dynamic that was, like, Inej and Jasper were, like, really upbeat and optimistic. And Kaz was more of, like, cynical and, I don't want to say dreary, but he didn't match their, like, energy, like, personality-wise. It seemed like he was the opposite of them. And that's a dynamic I really enjoy in shows. So seeing those interactions was a lot of fun to watch. I also really liked, it didn't seem like the romance plots played a huge part in the storytelling.
Are you referring to Alina and Mal?
Alina and Mal and Alina and Kerrigan and...
Well, Alina and Kerrigan were more... Right.
Yeah.
They were... It was obvious that she was falling for him.
It was obvious, but like...
Are you talking about like you're glad they didn't have sex scenes?
Well... No, I'm more meaning, like, there are certain, like, I'm trying to figure out how to word this. There were hints of it. And, like, Kerrigan was more obvious. And Alina and Mal, there were hints of it. But it wasn't, like, their main goal, it seemed like, was to tell this love story.
Yeah.
Their main goal was to tell the story of them trying to fight the Shadow Summoner and destroy the fold
and eventually come back together.
Yeah,
but
their goal to come back together wasn't based on, oh, I love him. It was, we're friends and I trust him and I want to see my childhood best friend again, not I need to find my boyfriend.
I agree with that part. I do want to mention one thing. One thing I kind of disagree with a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think they do love each other more than just friends, but it's very, very much hinted and it's not overt.
Yeah.
And that's what you like.
Yeah.
The love between them isn't overt.
Yeah.
And I think that their love it's more than just friendship love, but it's not overtly romantic love.
Yeah.
And I agree with you in that sense because there's too much, we've seen way too much overt romance, you know, like we want to see something different. And this is the thing that's different because it's obvious Mal loves her. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that she loves Mal, you know, when she's not being manipulated by Kerrigan.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've never had a kiss in season one.
Yeah.
Even when they are reunited, it's not like they were like, oh my God, I missed you so much. I love you. Mwah. But it's implied that their love is more than just friendship love.
Exactly, yeah. Another thing I liked was, I forget how to pronounce her name.
Jenya.
Jenya's betrayal. That was an interesting twist that they had. Like, I wasn't expecting it from the get-go. Like, and maybe that says something about me where it's like, in the beginning I was like, oh, she's working for all of them. She's got to be like... against Alina, but then, like, Alina trusted her, and I was like, okay, maybe she's not a bad guy. And then it turns out, not that she was a bad guy, so to say,
but she was under Kerrigan's,
she was more controlled by Kerrigan than it seemed in the beginning.
Yeah.
And she seemed, and, like, based on her actions, she was a lot more driven by her need for vengeance against the king, and, like, other men that had wronged her than it was, the overarching, like, she was okay with Kerrigan's behavior if it got her vengeance.
Yes.
instead of being like, Kerrigan's actions are going to have repercussions for everyone, and that's bad.
Yeah. I don't have too much to say about Jenya.
I think it bummed me a bit, too, because she gave me, like, I don't know if you ever watched Teen Wolf, but there's a character in there called Lydia. And she's very, like, feminine, but she's also really smart and, like, badass.
Hmm, okay.
And I loved her character. And in the beginning, when we're introduced to Jenya, I got Lydia vibes.
Okay.
And then it turns out that that wasn't the case. And it was a bit disappointing. So, like, I loved and hated Jenya's twist.
Yeah, I don't really have much to say about Jenya's character. I didn't like dig too much into it.
Yeah.
Although I would say it did surprise me that she was on Kerrigan's side this whole time. But I guess rewatching it, it makes sense because he's got eyes everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
And having the person who is, you know, getting her dressed and getting her putting makeup on her and escorting her to places off grounds, like the person who's gonna be with her every day, it makes sense for him to employ that person. Although I do want to say that I loved Jenya's power.
She was cool. Like, her actual power was really neat, too.
I forgot. What Grisha was she? Because she's not a Heartrender. She's not a Squaller. She's not Inferni. But she's something else.
I believe they called her a Taylor.
Taylor! Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like Chinyuan said, there's another type of Grisha, and it's called a Taylor. And instead of being able to control people's, like, internal, like, runnings, like their heart and their breath and everything, she can specifically only control their appearance. So you see it sometimes in the story. They have a body double for Alina during one of their displays, and she uses her power to make her look like Alina. And then, spoiler alert, she dies, and there's a really interesting spot where she was like, change me back. I don't want to die with someone else's face.
Yeah, that was sad.
And that was really sad.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a really interesting addition to show her power.
Mm-hmm. I liked her power. I think the Taylor powers are more unique.
Yeah.
Because, like, in any fantasy, you're going to have someone with fire powers.
Yeah.
Or someone with water powers. You know, like the elementals.
Yeah.
I think that's fire is so common. But I liked her powers. If I didn't really care for her character, but she had badass powers.
She did.
Yeah, and they're very useful. Like, I would love to have a tailor help put makeup on me every day.
Right.
Then I don't have to do it myself.
Yeah, it's like that extra 45 minutes of me doing my makeup is just fixed.
Yep. So I would like to circle back to analyzing General Kerrigan.
Yeah.
So, when we find out that he's the Black Heretic, the guy who has created the Fold all those centuries ago, and he's just grown hungrier and hungrier for power, and by the way, did you know that his mom, Bagra, is played by the same woman who was Madame Hooch?
Yeah.
Yeah!
Took me a minute to realize, but I was like, she looks really familiar.
Zoe Wanamaker plays Bagra, and she's the same woman who played Madame Hooch in Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah. But whenever I watch TV and movies, I live with my phone on IMDb.
Right?
And I realized recently that's not something everyone does.
But I do it.
Me too. And it's just like, they look familiar. Pulls up app, looks up, oh, they were in this. Okay.
Yeah. So his mom was amazing.
Bagra was a great character. I loved her.
So Kerrigan, he's hungry with power. He's immortal. We don't know for sure if he can be killed. But whoever has tried throughout the years has failed. And when we find out he's this manipulative asshole who is using Alina, because obviously he doesn't really love her.
Yeah.
So The thing with the stag is what really made me hate him. Because you know how they show, after Alina learns the truth about him, that next episode is where we see like a few scenes of flashback of him when he was younger and when he created the fold on accident. Because he used this like powerful magic, powerful spell or something that his mom warned him about.
Yeah.
And he unintentionally created the fold and Volcra.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, so for like 2 seconds when we first see the fold and Volcra, I honestly thought Volcra were dragons. And then I realized they weren't dragons later on. But they have wings like dragons.
Winged creatures, but...
Yeah. Their faces are not like dragons. But... Yeah,
and they don't breathe fire.
Oh, wait. They don't? I thought they did.
I don't remember them breathing fire.
You know what? It doesn't matter. So the thing with the stag is what really made me hate General Kerrigan because, okay, first of all, I love animals. So any sort of animal cruelty, animal killing that I see in shows, I'm going to be turned off by it for sure. It's going to make me cringe and sad. But so the point isn't the stag. The point is he kills the stag and he takes the antlers and merges them to Alina's collarbone, and it looks so fucking gross.
Oh, it's so freaky. Like,
the way he treats Alina is kind of similar to, like, people in an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
He treated her like property. He didn't treat her with respect. He was like, you are mine. We are connected. I'm using this stag antler collarbone thing. I forced it onto you. I control you and your powers. You can't go anywhere. You are mine.
Yeah.
And And like I said earlier, Ben Barnes is really good at playing bad guys.
Yeah.
So General Kerrigan, I think of him not just as a bad guy, not just as an evil guy, but as an abuser.
Yeah.
And it makes me hate him even more.
Like the...
Like his backstory doesn't make me have any empathy for him.
No, it's interesting. Like, I was expecting the fold to have been made on purpose. Like, they lead you to believe, and, like, everyone tells you in the show going up to that. And then to figure out that, oh, he created it on accident. Like, that was really interesting to see. But I agree, it doesn't necessarily make me have any empathy for his character. Especially after he, like, takes away Alina's bodily autonomy.
Yes. Autonomy. That's what it's called. Yes.
Yeah.
So.
And as like someone who, with a condition that kind of does that to me, and like I lose control of my own body, it really irks me seeing someone lose their bodily autonomy in any capacity.
Yeah.
Blah, words, apparently.
It's okay. It's just, I can't say words either.
It's just so frustrating to see, like, watching that. I was so angry at him and just, like, at the situation. And to a certain extent at, like, Alina at that point for still believing his words at face value.
Yeah, like, what, Alina, what did you think he was gonna do taking you into the fold?
Like, and not even that, it's just, like... When they got to the deer and she was trying to take the deer for herself, and he was like, if you take the deer, don't take the deer and I'll heal your friend. Like, I get it that she was stressed and it was a high stress situation and she was freaking out, but also, like, he makes the point later on, like, I said I'd heal him. I never said I'd let you see him again. I never said... Like, again, he'd get to stick around.
We're circling back to the behaviors and traits and mentalities of an abuser.
Exactly. Like, he's cutting her off from her friends and isolating her. And he's like, which you can see throughout the show, too. Not just, like, in these later actions of his, but I saw a post on Tumblr a while back that was talking about how, like, when Mal talks about Alina when she's not there, he still refers to her as Alina.
Uh-huh.
And, like, when General Kerrigan is talking about Alina when she's not there, it's my Sun Summoner.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, a really interesting nuance to think about, and, like, I didn't see that in the beginning.
Yeah.
I was like, just like, oh, she's the Sun Summoner and that's a big deal. But then later on, it's like, oh, I should have known. He's a shit.
Oh, man. Oh, man. That's a, you should show me that meme. Oh, you don't have to do it right now.
Okay.
But, oh, sorry. You can send it to me later. But yeah. Yeah. Hate the guy, love the actor.
Yeah.
So that's my analysis of Kerrigan.
I liked in the, like, filming aspect of it, too, in the, like, flashback scenes, he doesn't have a beard. Like, he looks, not to bring it back to Chronicles of Narnia, but he looks a lot more like the young Prince Caspian in the Prince Caspian movie with his, like, long hair and no facial hair. And then, like, fast forward into him, like, years later, and now he's got shorter hair and facial hair. And it's a really interesting on, like, an interesting take to show, like, that loss of innocence, like, visually. So.
One more thing I'll say about Kerrigan. Like, in his mind, he was, like, it. The way he said something about how you're my equal to Alina, how, like, I don't know how to phrase this. In his mind, he doesn't think he's an abuser because he thinks he's finally found the person who is his equal, and he just wants to keep his equal close to him.
Yeah.
So, like, he doesn't realize that he's being, or maybe he does realize he's being problematic. I don't know. What do you think about that, about his words? How, like, oh, because he says to Mal, like, you're going to age. And, you know, eventually, because she's Grisha, she's not going to age. She's going to live a long, long life like me. She'll eventually come around to understanding my way of thinking.
Yeah.
And
at the very least, he thinks he's right, which is the most frustrating because not just because he's not, but it just, like, when you meet people like that in real life, too, it's like they're at a point where you're not changing their mind anymore, it seems like.
Because they're all in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so frustrating.
So we're getting close to an hour, but that's fine. Yeah. We can talk over because I have so much stuff to say about Kaz, too. Okay, so Kaz is my man crush right now. And also Freddie Carter is my man crush right now. I think I looked up his IMDb. So, obviously, he's a newer actor. He hasn't been in a whole lot.
Yeah.
But I guess he had a small role in Wonder Woman and Pennyworth.
I've never seen Pennyworth. I haven't seen Wonder Woman in a while, but it would make sense. Like, he has that face where he'd fit in, like, timepieces really
yes,
well.
Yes, yes.
Like, certain actors have different different looks where it's, like, I saw it compared to, like, Ben Affleck, you are never going to see in a period piece. His face is too modern looking. But, like, people like Freddie Carter and, like, all the actors in this, really, they look like they could be from 100 years ago as well as now.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that he's a soldier in Wonder Woman because that, I think, takes place during World War I, if I'm remembering correctly.
And I'm the wrong, like, person to ask.
A World War I soldier. He looks like he could pull that off.
I rewatched some of the Crow scenes yesterday just to get a better understanding of their characters. And I want to focus a little bit on Kaz right now because he's the leader of the Crow Gang. Yeah. He owns the Crow Club. They're called the Crow Gang. To us, we call them the Crow Gang. And he, okay, so the first time you see him, you see his cane. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, he's telling Jesper, no loud noises. You know, like, he kind of comes off as an asshole.
Yeah.
But you quickly realize that he's not an asshole because you get so much backstory with him just in the first episode.
Yeah, you do.
What were you going to say?
I was like, or at the very least, he's a lovable asshole.
So you meet this man who owns a club. He has a limping condition, mm-hmm. which is why he has the cane, but he doesn't always... His condition isn't, like, severe.
Yeah.
Because the top part of his cane is, like, a little bit more decorative than functional, yeah. I feel like.
Yeah.
Or that could be a decorative set decision or a book decision. I'm not sure.
For whatever reason, in my mind, I likened it to, like, Lucius Malfoy's cane in Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're meeting this man who... owns this club, and you know just from his interaction with this one guy at the very beginning about this painting that's up for grabs that's been stolen.
Yeah.
And he's like, what painting is it? And the guy tells him, and then when Kaz goes into his room to like wash his hands and whatnot, you're passing by the very painting that yeah. that guy was talking about, because Kaz and, you know, we're assuming Inej and Jesper, they were all in on it to steal that painting.
Yeah.
And they probably stole a bunch of other paintings that Kaz had in his bedroom, too. But
probably.
you just learn so much about this man just from the first 5-10 minutes of seeing him on screen.
Yeah.
And we never know what causes his limping, but we do know that, obviously, he's competing with this older man who owns another club called Pekka Rollins. And they're both competing to get this job to this million kruge. I'm assuming kruge is the equivalent of dollar.
Yeah, I think that's their
currency. Yeah. This million kruge job to travel across the fold. And capture the Sun Summoner. And he's got ambition, and it shows.
Mm-hmm.
He trusts his friends, and it shows.
Yeah.
And he trusts their abilities. He never questions them. I don't know. He comes off as a good leader, even if he doesn't necessarily have the face of a good leader.
Yeah.
And I don't know this off the top of my head, but I vaguely remember in the first episode or the second episode, he's got some sort of history with Pekka Rollins, but since Pekka is older, Pekka must have wronged him in some way when he was younger,
mm-hmm.
because Pekka now doesn't recognize Kaz as an adult.
Yeah.
So there's some history there that we don't know about, and I know we'll get into season 2 theories, but I think it would be kind of nice to see Pekka Rollins again, just so that yeah. we can dive a little bit deeper into Kaz's background.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to see more of the underground like society that we see Kaz and them come from.
Oh, you mean Ketterdam?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, they're in Ketterdam at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Just like the way that area functions seemed a lot more interesting than the palace.
Oh my god, seriously. Like, I agree. It was way more interesting to me. And shoot, I forgot what I was going to say about Kaz. Something that I really admire, and this is going to tie into his relationship with Inej.
Mm-hmm.
So Inej was, they kind of imply this, so I'm taking a guess. I think Inej was a sex worker at the menagerie because he is paying off her, like, indentureship from the menagerie.
Yeah.
Yeah. She used to be there, and now he's working. Now she works for him at the club, and, yeah, you know, she's doing grifter-type jobs for him, right?
Yeah.
So he obviously respects and admires her as a worker, as a colleague. But
yeah,
I think, and this is very hinted at, so it's definitely not overt, and this is my interpretation. I think he loves Inej.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has romantic feelings for her, but he knows that obviously he's kind of like the boss. He doesn't want to, first of all, he doesn't want to ruin their current relationship because they have a good working relationship as colleagues, as friends. And second, like, she doesn't necessarily have the same feelings for him. I think Inej admires Kaz in that he thinks big, he has ambitions, he knows what he wants, and he's very determined to get what he wants. And he's not just getting it for himself, he's sharing it with them.
Yeah.
And I feel like Kaz is in love with Inej, but at the same time, he knows that he can't be selfish because I didn't rewatch the end of season one, but I think, and sorry, we're kind of getting into season two spoiler, or sorry, season two theories, but I think Inej is going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like, she was going to break away from the Crow Gang, and he was sad about that. But at the same time, he doesn't want to be in the way of her goals.
Yeah. He seems to have a good understanding of, like, he can't impose his power as the leader and take advantage of her.
Exactly.
And I really
appreciate... He's the opposite of Kerrigan.
Yes.
In that sense.
I really appreciated that, like, he didn't use the fact that he was, like, paying off her indenturedness as a reason to keep her with him.
Exactly!
He was just like, paying for this, but you're free now, so do what you want to do, not just what I want you to do.
He's actually a good guy.
Yeah.
And he doesn't kind of look like a good guy, but he is a good guy once you get to know him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fuck, I was gonna say more. I know. I love this guy. I liked his sleight of hand tricks, and I liked how he could kind of blend into any scenario that they were going into. Like the heist to steal the plans of the little palace area to get the sun summoner. Like, he, when he disguised himself as like
a guard,
a sculptor. Oh, he was a guard at the end, but he dressed himself up as like this fancy sculptor to talk to that one guy at the place guarding the floor plans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it's just funny to see him be in these different roles. I did like him as the guard at the end after Inej comes out with the floor plans.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, she thinks he's just another guard, and then he brings down his cane just at the right moment to be like, hey, it's me. And then she's like, I forgot what she said exactly, but Inej said something like, well, that was kind of slow. I could have killed you. And then he was like, no, I was right on time. I liked Kaz, and I dissected him a little bit, just like I did with Kerrigan. So
yeah.
I know we're kind of running out of time, so we can dive right into season two theories. I've been talking a lot, so I'm going to let you take over, Gary.
My main thing for season two is that I hope the Nina and Mateus, like, arc links back to something. Like, I hope it actually connects later on.
They don't really show Fjordins outside. Yeah. In season one, the presence of Fjordins wasn't very prominent.
Yeah.
Aside from Mateus. So hopefully you're right and we learn more about Theardens.
Like, I'm hoping the reason it doesn't make much sense now is because it's meant to make sense later. And maybe we'd know a bit more had we read the books, but like... that also ties into, though, I just want to see, like, more of their, of the world itself. Like, we really only see, like, both sides of the, fold mm-hmm. and a little bit of Fyrda mm-hmm. and just, like, the frozen wasteland. I'd like to be able to see maybe some of Shuhan or, what was else they called, or actual parts of, like, the Fyrda of, like, their society and not just frozen wasteland. Or I think there's another one that's, like, on the other end of the fold that's, like, south. But...
I know Shuhan is south, but...
Oh, okay.
I would need to look at a map.
Yeah, same.
But, So I agree with you in that I would like to see some, I would like to learn some more about the Shuhan people.
Yeah.
And, you know, learn about them in a non-aggressive way.
Mm-hmm.
Because so far, all the instances of Shuhan that were mentioned in season one were very aggressive.
Yeah.
And racist.
Mm-hmm.
So ideally, hopefully we can learn a little bit more about Shuhan. And I think, so this is my theory. So, obviously, at the end, we know Kerrigan is not dead.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got an army of Volcra that are loyal to him. So I think he's going because he destroyed part of Rafkin City at the end. Yeah, and yeah. I think he's going to devastate. I think he's going to ruin more cities in Rafka.
Yeah.
And I think he's gonna try to track Alina and Mal wherever they're going. And my hope is that maybe his threatening Rafkin cities, they're gonna catch the eye of the Shuhan Emperor or royalty. Whoever's in charge of the Shuhan territory there,
yeah.
They're gonna catch their eye. And then they're going to maybe come up with their own army. And then, like, Kerrigan will have his Volcra army, and then the Shuhan people will have their army, and then there's going to be some fight, because he can't just keep destroying cities and not face consequences.
Yeah.
And Alina is going to get caught up with it somehow.
Yeah.
Because he's obviously mad at everybody. Alina, yeah. Mal, his own mother, yeah. He has a lot of enemies.
Yeah. I feel like Alina might be his main enemy, though, just because she's so, like, antithetical to his powers, where, like, she, at the very least, is his most powerful enemy, because her power specifically can destroy his.
Yeah.
So she's probably going to play, I mean, she has to, she's the main character, but she's probably going to play a very big role in defeating him, like, in the war itself. I'm hoping it's not just a, we've got to keep you protected for the final battle, though. You know?
Yeah. And I wonder, because she is part Shu, because her parents were Shu, that's what we learned, she was an orphan, I wonder if there is a confrontation between Kerrigan's army and Shuhan's army. And again, this is all just my speculation.
Yeah.
If there is some sort of confrontation, I wonder, I would suspect that the Shuhan royalty people, they're going to have eyes everywhere too. And they're going to try to kidnap Alina, because obviously she's also Shu.
Yeah.
Even though she didn't grow up in Shuhan.
Yeah.
Like, they're gonna think that she's one of them and that she belongs to them.
Yeah.
So then it's gonna be like a Kerrigan saying, "Oh, that's my sun summoner," and then Shuhan people royalty, they could be saying, "Oh, well, she's one of us. She belongs to the Shuhan." I can kind of see that happening too.
Yeah.
I don't really have a lot of theories with the Crow Gang, though. I'm kind of open to anything because they have the best adventures.
Yeah. I think you were right in saying that Inez gave hints of her wanting to go off, though. So I'm kind of interested to see how, if she goes off on her own or separate from Kaz and Jasper, I'd like to see, like, how that plays out or, like, how that affects things with them. And if she does go off, like, I want to see what the them reuniting would look like.
Yeah. So, this is my only theory. It's a small one, and you already said it. She's gonna leave the Crow Gang. So, this is what I'm thinking. If there's 8 episodes in season 2, and it looks like there will be, according to IMDb, because Netflix usually does 8 or 10 episodes. What if she leaves in episode 1, and then, you know, shit happens, and then maybe she comes back in episode 4 or 5 by the second half? So then she's reunited with the Crow Gang, and really, in terms of episodes, she's probably not going to be away for that long.
Yeah.
Because she's still part of the main cast.
Yeah.
So they can't leave her out for too long. And maybe she is left out, but we see scenes of her doing her own thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Anything else that you think might happen?
It seems like they sort of hinted at Nina joining the Crows.
I think she will.
Just because they were like, well, we need a heart renderer again.
And, like, they zoomed in on her listening to them.
Yeah.
I would love if Nina joined them.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense. And she's got, like, that spunk.
Yeah. She definitely has, like, the same level of personality to probably hold her own with the Crows. Which would link her back to everything and make sense of things, I think. But then it leaves Mateus doing who knows what.
Oh, but he was caught, quote-unquote caught, as a slave owner.
Yeah.
So, like, he has to face that. Honestly, I don't know. It's up in the air because I feel like even though he hates Nina now, like, Nina still feels guilty.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Her motive, maybe she'll need money to save him, to, like, clear her conscience. So she joins the Crows to get that money to save him.
They're her
motives.
Like pay a bail?
Yeah.
I
don't know if that's a thing in there, but, like, if... I mean, but Inez was in indentured servitude.
True.
So, like, it sets up that there's a possibility for her to pay to get him out of there. Mm. Like, bail or, like, I don't know what else, but...
I don't know.
Or to, like, bribe the dude who's bringing him to court.
Yes, because anyone can be won by a shitload of money.
Yep.
That's a really good theory. I hope that happens.
I just came up with that on the spot. But
I think your theory makes sense because it's hinted that she's going to join the Crow Gang.
Yeah.
And the Crow Gang could have more heists and jobs and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then she could possibly get her portion of whatever money and then part ways.
Yep. Who knows?
Yeah. But man, this has been so much fun.
I've had a really good time.
Oh, thank you so much, Cammy, for coming on to the Bingeables podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for doing this. And I appreciate it. And we are wrapping up here. So until next time, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter @bingeablespod, or you can email us at bingeablespod@gmail.com.
Until next time. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin MacLeod.